This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen, wa salatu wa salamu ala Nabi al-Kareem wa ala alihi wa ashabihi ajma'een. We begin by praising Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and asking Allah to send His peace and blessings upon the final Prophet Muhammad ibn Abdullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam and all those who follow His way with righteousness until the end of time. So, today's topic, it's going to be a bit technical. And I chose it because it's a question that a lot of young Muslims ask me. I get asked this question a lot, and unfortunately for some of the people asking this question, it actually leads them to doubts about the religion. So if it's not addressed properly, people begin to doubt Islam. And so therefore I decided, even though it's a very technical topic, it's necessary that we address this question from the minbar and that we address it in a way that's understandable to many, and hopefully that will ease the minds and hearts of those who are doubtful about this topic, and inshallah from there we can continue to spread this message to others who also have doubts about this topic. The topic is a question which I get asked very often, and that question is, if Islam is one, if Allah is one, if the Quran is one, why are there so many differences of opinion in Islam? Like, it's a legitimate question which comes to the minds of many people. They look around, one alim tells them something is halal, another tells them the same thing is haram, someone else tells them it's makruh, someone tells them to pray by putting their hands in a certain way, someone else by putting their hands in a different way. And many young people become confused about this. And in this confusion, they begin to think that maybe there's something wrong with Islam. Right? This is the thought that goes to the young people's mind. They begin to think that if Islam is one and everything's from Allah, why are there so much differences and diversion amongst the Muslims? So to address this topic, as I said, it's quite complex and difficult. In fact, I teach an entire course on this topic at the university, which takes us 5 months. To summarize that in 20 minutes is going to be quite difficult. So what I'm going to do is, I'm only going to speak about 4 points, which I hope will help us to clear this up. The first point I want to speak about is, what's the difference between an acceptable difference of opinion and what's not acceptable? Right? There's two types of differences of opinion. What's acceptable and what's not. How do you know the difference? I'll come to that. Right? The second point I want to discuss is the wisdom behind the existence of differences of opinion. Why did Allah allow this to exist? What's the wisdom? What's the benefit in there being different opinions in the religion? The third thing, and most important, this is going to make up the bulk of today's discussion, I will highlight some of the reasons why ulama have different opinions. Not all, just some. Because as I said, it will take us hours to discuss all of the reasons. And some of those reasons can get very technical. But we'll go through some of them, the ones that are more understandable. Right? And then finally, the fourth and most important point for the average Muslim, what do you do about it? How do you and I, the average Muslim, how do we handle this concept of differences of opinion? I'll give you a 3-step approach for handling it. So these are the 4 topics which I hope to cover within the next 30 minutes. And may Allah give us barakah in our time and help us to convey the message accordingly. So point number 1. We have 2 extremes in the Ummah today. We have those people who, if you don't agree with them on every little issue, they want to kick you out of the fold of Islam. So if you don't pray the way they pray, they kick you out of the fold of Islam. If you don't believe what they believe on specific, tiny, minute issues, they kick you out of the fold of Islam. This is one extreme. The other extreme, you have this modernist, hippie version of Islam, where everything goes. Someone can believe in a prophet after Muhammad, and they say, no, you must still call him a Muslim. Right? These are 2 extremes. One extreme, everybody's a Muslim. The other extreme, nobody's a Muslim except me and my friends. Right? These are 2 extremes regarding differences of opinion. Rather, the middle part, the part of Islam, is that there are 2 types of differences in this religion. That which is acceptable and that which is not. Now, for the ulama, it's easier for them to figure out what's an acceptable difference of opinion and what is not. For the average Muslim, it can be very confusing because it's a very technical subject to go into. And so, I just want to give you one principle to apply to make this easy for you to understand. If a difference of opinion exists between ulama, then it is an acceptable difference of opinion. Meaning, if you have a Hanafi alim telling you this is the view, and a Maliki alim telling you no, this is the view, and a Shafi alim saying no, this is the view, All three are acceptable. All three positions are acceptable because they are coming from within the scholarly body. They are coming from a scholarly approach. They are coming from a scholarly analysis of the Quran and Sunnah. So all of these are acceptable views. But if you have an opinion coming from outside of scholarship, coming from ignorant people, coming from people who have no basis in understanding fiqh and aqidah, and it's coming from a deviant perspective, it's coming from a perspective of trying to make Islam like this or trying to make Islam like that, then that's not an acceptable opinion. That becomes deviance, that becomes hearsay, that becomes bid'ah, that becomes a problem, and that becomes something that must be spoken out against. Let me give you an example, right? The issue of hijab. There are two acceptable opinions on hijab. The opinion of many of the Hanafi and Maliki ulama is that a woman must wear hijab and the niqab is mustahab. It's optional. The opinion of Imam Ash-Shafi, Imam Ahmad ibn Hanbal and many other ulama is that the niqab is wajib. Both approaches are fine. Both approaches are acceptable. If someone follows the opinion that niqab is mustahab, that's fine. If someone follows the opinion that niqab is wajib, that's also fine. But nowadays you have a third group coming up saying there's no such thing as hijab. This opinion is not acceptable. This opinion is deviant. This opinion doesn't come from within the scholarly works. It doesn't come from the Quran and Sunnah. It doesn't come from the early ulama. It comes from people who are trying to please the West. It comes from people who are trying to make Islam suit their lifestyle instead of trying to make their lifestyle suit Islam. And so the first two opinions, we will say those are acceptable differences of opinion. This third opinion, we will say this is deviation. This is changing the religion. This is not acceptable. And we must speak out against it. So this is very important to understand. When the differences occur between the ulama, these are legitimate differences of opinion. When they come from people who have other agendas, and they are trying to change Islam to suit the agenda, that we do not accept. That has to be spoken out against. That has to be warned against. Otherwise, we will be responsible for allowing people to change the religion. So this topic today, we are going to focus only on the acceptable differences of opinion. Right? But I first wanted to draw the line. You must understand, not all differences of opinion are acceptable. When someone is bringing something from outside Islam and trying to force Islam to change to suit that thing, that's not acceptable. But our topic today are the acceptable differences of opinion. The differences that exist between the Hanafis and the Shafis and the Malikis and the Hanbalis, between the ulama. These are acceptable differences of opinion. Our question is, why do they exist? How do they exist? And what do we do about it? So let's get into the topic. Why did Allah allow this to exist? If Allah wanted, we could have been one nation. The whole world could have followed one religion, one opinion on everything. Allah created a world full of diversity. And in this diversity, He created a religion of truth that has diversity within it. And so in the true religion of Islam, there are different opinions, there are different approaches, there are different madahib, there are different ways to approach the religion. And many of them are acceptable. Not all, but many of them are acceptable. Right? There are some approaches to the religion that are not acceptable. So why did Allah allow this to exist? There are many reasons that the ulama have mentioned. From amongst them is that if Allah had made clear the exact fiqh ruling on every single issue in this world, the Quran may have been like 50 volumes long. Think about it. If Allah had to list in detail, this is the fiqh ruling on this and that and this on everything that's going to happen till the end of times, the Quran would have been like 50 volumes long. It would have been impossible to memorize it. It would have been impossible to study it properly. It would have been impossible for the layman to even interact with it. It would have been too much. Too much for the human being to handle. Instead, Allah revealed a religion where He made clear what is most important, and then He gave principles to guide the secondary issues, and He left it to the ulama to figure out those secondary issues using those principles. Right? So Allah, out of His mercy to us, and out of His wisdom, He has made what is most important clear, and what is secondary, He has left it open to difference of opinion. What this allows also, is it allows us as Muslims to get used to there being different opinions, to start tolerating each other, to start behaving with each other in a way where we respect other people who are different from us. Because what would have happened if Islam was clear on every tiny issue? Then practicing Muslims would be very mean people. Right? There'd be no room for someone to walk into the masjid and pray differently from you. Right? There'd be no room for someone to be dressed differently from you. There would be this extra strictness about Islam, which goes against what Islam is all about. Islam, if you read the Quran, if you read the Hadith, it is a religion of mercy. It's a religion of practicality. It's a religion that is meant to be practiced in every place and time and culture. It's meant to be universal. It's not meant to be extra strict. And so Allah revealed it in such a way that what is most important, Allah is very strict about and very clear about. Right? Zina is haram, that's clear. Salah is 5 times a day, that's clear. Where do I put my hands in my salah? Allah left that open to different interpretations. Why? So we get used to respecting different viewpoints. So when you're standing next to someone, they're praying differently from you, and you still love them as your brother in Islam, you are attaining a higher level of iman. So this is Allah's wisdom to us. Another wisdom behind Allah allowing differences of opinion, it gives us a way of intellectually approaching this religion, instead of it just being blind following. So now ulama get to engage with the text. They get to study the Quran, study the Hadith, study the principles of fiqh, interact with it on a scholarly level, think about it, ponder over it, spend nights going deep into issues of fiqh. It becomes a lively and scholarly religion, and not just a religion of blind followers. If Allah made every single issue clear, there'd be no need for ulama. There'd be no need for scholarship. And Allah wanted this to be a nation of ulama. Allah wanted this to be an ummah that intellectually engages with the text. And so Allah created as a religion wherein there are different opinions. So these are some of the wisdoms behind the existence of difference of opinion. As the Khalifa Umar ibn Abdul Aziz rahimahullah had mentioned, and we spoke about him in the previous khutbah, he said that it is Allah's mercy that He has made this religion a religion of different opinions. If Allah had revealed strict opinions on every single issue, the religion would have been too hard for the average Muslim to practice. This is coming from a Khalifa 1,300 years ago. It's even more true today. If every single issue of fiqh was strict and clear, Islam would have been too hard for the average Muslim. When there's differences of opinion, there's a bit more flexibility. You can say, okay, you know, that guy is eating prawns. It's not my madhab, but other madhabs do allow it, you know. Meanwhile, if that issue was clear, you know, there'd be fist fights taking place in Ocean Basket. But now we have differences of opinion, so we can tolerate it, but we can ease up a bit. We can relax a bit. Allah did this to make this religion more practical and to give us that sense of ease in how we practice Islam. So now to the main part of this talk. And I said this part gets very technical, so I'm going to try and make it as simple and understandable as possible. And I'm only going to go through some of the reasons why difference of opinion exists. There are many others. The first and perhaps the main reason why differences of opinion exist amongst ulama is because they are different approaches towards the Quran and Sunnah. Going all the way back towards the Sahaba. For amongst the Sahaba, there were two who were most famous in the field of fiqh. Abdullah ibn Umar radiallahu anhu and Abdullah ibn Mas'ud radiallahu anhu. Abdullah ibn Umar's approach to fiqh was whatever Allah and the Prophet said, he would follow it, no questions asked. Abdullah ibn Mas'ud's approach to fiqh was to understand why did the Prophet say it? What's the context? What's the wisdom? What's the benefit? How do we apply it now? How do we apply it in this situation? And so this became the two separate approaches towards fiqh, which in technical terms, Abdullah ibn Umar's approach became known as the Ahlul Hadith approach, and Abdullah ibn Mas'ud's approach became known as the Ahlul Roy approach. To put it simply, one approach is to follow what the Prophet ﷺ said. The other approach is to follow what the Prophet ﷺ meant. And this goes all the way back to the time of the Prophet ﷺ. So once when the Prophet ﷺ and the Sahaba were on a journey towards an enemy fortress. The fortress was called Banu Qurayza. The enemy was called Banu Qurayza. And the Prophet ﷺ, he said, none of you should pray Salatul Asr until you get to Banu Qurayza. So on their way there, Asr time was almost finished. Half the army stopped and they prayed Asr before the time ended. The other half marched to Banu Qurayza and made Qada of the Asr at Banu Qurayza. And when the Prophet asked them why, the one group said, that you said we mustn't pray Asr until we get there, so we obeyed you. The other group said, no, we understood you meant that we must hurry there, and of course we're not going to miss Asr on time. You didn't mean for us to miss Asr on time, so we prayed Asr on time. The Prophet ﷺ, he did not tell either group you are wrong. So what happened here? One group followed what the Prophet said, the other group followed what the Prophet meant. And this became the two approaches towards fiqh. And this over time became the various madhahib. So for example, the Hanafi madhab is more rooted in following what the Prophet ﷺ meant. Right? The Ahlul Rai approach. Imam Abu Hanifa and his students, they would get together, they would discuss, and they would say, what did the Prophet mean by this? What was the context? What was the reason? And they would have discussions about this. Some of the other ulama, like Imam Ahmad ibn Hanbal and Ibn Hazm of the Zahiri madhab, their approach was more, the Prophet said this, so this is what we're going to do. No questions asked. Again, both approaches are completely acceptable. Both approaches are completely acceptable. Let me give you a practical example. The Prophet ﷺ said, whoever's garment or clothes is below their ankle will be in the hellfire. Ahlul Hadith, understanding of this hadith, that having your clothes below your ankle is haram. Right? This is the opinion of many ulama. Right? The Ahlul Rai understanding of this hadith is that in that time, arrogant people, to show their arrogance, used to have their clothes flowing on the ground. So what the Prophet ﷺ is prohibiting is dressing with arrogance, not your clothes being below your ankles. And so Imam Abu Hanifa said, clothes below the ankle is haram. Imam Shafi said, it's only haram if it's done out of arrogance. Are either of them rejecting the hadith? No, they just understood it differently. One looked at what the Prophet said, one looked at what the Prophet meant, and they arrived at different conclusions. Both approaches are acceptable. We have to learn to understand this. Both approaches are acceptable. You know how many times you walk into a masjid to give a lecture and everyone's looking at your pants. And if your pants is below your ankles, they shut their ears. They don't hear any word you say. Person giving a lecture could be following the Imam Shafi's opinion. Abu Bakr, whose pants used to be below his ankles, and the Prophet ﷺ told him, that's fine for you because you're not doing it out of arrogance. Right? There are different opinions on these issues. Don't be so hardcore on the secondary issues where the ulama differed. So this is the first reason why ulama differ. There are two approaches to fiqh. It depends which approach that alim has adopted. Some alims have a ahlul rai approach, a more intellectual, engaging with the text approach. Some have a more ahlul hadith, that whatever the Prophet said we will do approach. And again, both approaches, both of these methodologies go back to the Sahaba, both of these methodologies are completely acceptable. The second reason why scholars differ, and this is very technical, so I'm going to keep it as simple as possible. Every mazhab has different conditions for accepting a hadith in fiqh. Right? So for example, the Hanafi mazhab will only accept a hadith in fiqh if it reaches a certain level of authenticity. Meaning there are some hadiths which are authentic, so the Shafi mazhab will rule accordingly, but the Hanafi mazhab won't accept it because it's not at the level that they're looking for. Right? So let's say this is an authentic hadith, but we won't base a fiqh ruling on it because it's not on this level. Right, so they have different understandings of at what level must a hadith be at for it to be used in fiqh. Even Imam Malik had a different approach. Imam Malik, he lived in Medina at the time when the children and the grandchildren of Sahaba were living in Medina. So if he found a hadith contradicting the practice of the people of Medina at his time, he would rather follow the practice of the people of Medina. Why? Because he said this is the sunnah passed down from the Sahaba to the children and grandchildren. So it's more likely to be correct than a single hadith. So sometimes the hadith may say something and the Maliki madhab will say something else because it's following the sunnah narrated through deeds, not through words. So again, it's very technical to go into, but just understand it exists. Understand that these differences exist amongst the ulama. You may go to one alim, they tell you this is the ruling because this is the hadith. Another alim say, that hadith, it's authentic, but it's not on the level for fiqh, so that's why I don't rule accordingly. But again, these are acceptable differences of opinion amongst the ulama. None of them are rejecting the hadith. They just have different understandings of what level should the hadith be at for it to be used in fiqh. Right? The third reason why ulama have differences of opinion is when there seem to be two hadiths that seem to contradict each other, which one do we follow? Right? Which one do we follow? When there seem to be two hadiths that seem to contradict each other. Let me give you an issue which again causes problems in our community for no reason. It's actually a legitimate difference of opinion. Aisha radiallahu anha narrated that the Prophet ﷺ prohibited the making of statues, right? Of statues and the images of human beings and animals, right? But Aisha radiallahu anha also narrated that she had dolls, including a horse with wings. So is this a contradiction? Well, the ulama have two approaches here. The first approach, some of the Hanafi ulama have said that the making of images is haram. And so they made interpretation of the second hadith, and they said, that's not the real twice, it just used the word twice. They were just twice of their time, it wasn't real twice. Other ulama, and this is found in most of the madahib, Imam An-Nawawi was of this view, he said, no, both hadiths are acceptable. He said, making of images is prohibited for adult usage, because it can lead to idol worship. But for children, twice, children's things which have images, he said, that's perfectly fine. Because there's no fear of shirk here. And so this became a difference of opinion amongst the ulama. Some ulama believe children's toys and cartoons and things with images are halal. Some believe it's haram. Both approaches are based on hadith. Both opinions are based on hadith. And both opinions can be traced back to early scholars. Those who are saying it's haram, Imam Abu Hanifa said that. Those who are saying it's halal, Imam An-Nawawi said that. Both of them were great ulama. Both opinions are acceptable. You don't have to fight with people over this. Now, I don't know how many times I've seen Muslims fight over this issue, you know, as if this is a matter of iman and kufr. It's not. It's a legitimate difference of opinion in fiqh that goes right back to the beginning. So sometimes the scholars differ on which hadith is the main hadith to follow in a specific fiqh issue. The third reason, or rather the fourth reason, why ulama differ, and this one here again may come as a shock to many of you, is because of culture. Right? Many people don't know this. But culture is very important in fiqh. One of the five main principles of fiqh, agreed upon by all the madhabs, is al-adat muhakkamat, which means the local culture is the deciding factor. This is a principle of fiqh. When there is a clash of cultures, and both cultures are halal, then the fiqh ruling goes according to the local culture. Now what's interesting is Imam Abu Hanifa was one of the main people who mentioned and thought and promoted this idea that local culture is the deciding factor. I say this because today so many people who claim to be Hanafi try to import cultures from India to South Africa instead of adopting the local culture, while in reality Imam Abu Hanifa's approach was, you must adopt to the culture of the country you are living in. This was Imam Abu Hanifa's approach, that you must adopt to the culture of the country you are living in. This was something very clear in the early Hanafi fiqh books, that when there is a clash of cultures, you go with the local culture. Now this is only in secondary issues where it does not contradict the Quran and Hadith. Right? So for example, you'll find this mainly applied in marriage and business laws. So for example, if you are in India and you have to ask an alim from India, after getting married, should I live with my parents or move into my own home? An alim in India may tell you, live with your parents. An alim in South Africa may tell you, move into your own home. Why? Why there's a difference of opinion here? Because the cultures are so different. What's beneficial in one country may be harmful in another country. In the Indian culture, it is beneficial to continue living with your parents after marriage. In South African culture, that normally leads to fights between the mother-in-law and daughter-in-law. So it's more beneficial to have a separate home. So the ulama, based on this cultural difference, will give a different ruling in different countries. Because this is how fiqh works. Fiqh, Islamic law, is meant to be universal, applicable to every time, every place, every culture. And so Allah has made it like this, that the laws can change. It's the secondary laws, not the primary laws. The secondary laws can change from culture to culture, from time to time, from place to place. And so an alim in Saudi Arabia may give one fatwa, and an alim in India may give a different fatwa, and an alim in Durban may give a different fatwa, and an alim in Cape Town may give a different fatwa. And all of them are acceptable because each of them are according to the culture they are living in. And each of them are suitable for the people living in that culture. Right? This is something which is very important. So for example, here the issue of the beard. Some of my students in Egypt, when the coup happened in Egypt, they asked me, will it be permissible for them to shave their beards? Now my general opinion is, it's haram to shave your beard. But in that context, I told them it's permissible. Why? Because in Egypt at that time, people with beards were being locked up in jail. They were being oppressed. And in Islamic fiqh, saving human life takes precedence over the secondary issues. So to save their lives, this will become permissible. Will I give the same fatwa to someone in Durban? No, you have full freedom to grow your beard in Durban. No one's going to do anything to you for growing a beard in Durban. So no, I will not give the same fatwa here because the context is different. Sometimes the context differs from person to person. So for example, two men may walk up to the Molana and say, Molana, take a second wife. Right? And the Molana will tell one guy, okay, go ahead. He tell the other guy, no way. Why? Why two different rulings for two different people? Because he knows this guy is just, he's fair, he's wealthy, he knows how to take care of women. This guy, he's got one wife, he can't even pay the bills, he's making her work. You know, he can't even take care of her. He doesn't know how to be just, he doesn't know how to manage his time. So, this guy, fine. That guy, not fine. Different rulings, different context. Now we see this in the hadith on the issue of child custody. In some hadith, the Prophet ﷺ gave custody to the mother, in some he gave it to the father, in some he let the child choose himself. The great Maliki jurist Ibn Ashur, he's commented on these hadiths and he said, the Prophet ﷺ is teaching us here not to take one ruling on child custody, rather to leave it case by case. Because in some cases, the mother has more right. In some cases, the father has more right. In some cases, the child knows himself who's going to be a better parent, so let him choose. So Islam doesn't take a specific position on this. It leaves it up, you know, to case by case basis. Each case will come to the alim and he will decide accordingly. So the fourth reason why ulama differ is because the culture may be different or the context may be different. Right? And finally, the fifth reason I want to mention, and again, as I said, there are dozens of reasons why ulama have differences of opinion, but the fifth one, very applicable to South Africa and some of the fiqh rulings which people are raising here, sometimes one alim may have access to information that the other alim does not. For example, the issue of smoking cigarettes, right? Whenever I tell people it's haram, they tell me, yeah, but Sheikh so-and-so in a book written 40 or 50 years ago said it's makruh. Well, 40 or 50 years ago, the scientific data proving the fatal harms of smoking was not available. So the ulama of that time did not have access to the knowledge that the ulama of today have. So the ulama of that time, they look at smoking and say, okay, it causes bad breath, what else? Nothing else. Bad breath is makruh, so they say it's makruh. Now, ulama today have access to information that smoking kills lives. It takes lives. It's fatal. Causes millions of deaths every year. So their ruling will change accordingly based on this new information. And so today, many ulama, myself included, believe that smoking is haram. Why? Because harming yourself and killing yourself is haram. Doing things purposely to harm your own body is haram. And so therefore the ruling will differ. And somebody say, but so-and-so Sheikh, you know, when I was young, he said he was makruh. He didn't know what we know today. That's why he says makruh. If he was alive today, he'd probably say it's haram too, because information has changed. We have new information. This is very, very important. You know, we see this early on in Islamic history when coffee was first discovered. Coffee was discovered by Muslims, right? And initially, some ulama thought it was like alcohol. So they say it's haram. So, when they were given a chance to taste it and to see what it actually does, and they realized this is the opposite of alcohol, it's helping us pray tahajjud, it's helping us discuss fiqh rulings, it's making us more intellectual, it's literally the opposite of alcohol, they changed their ruling. They say it's halal. They now had new information. The initial information was this thing is changing the brains a bit, you know. It's giving people energy. So they thought it's making them intoxicated. But later on when they realize it's the opposite, it's stimulating their creativity, it's stimulating their intellect, it's giving them energy, they realize it's something completely halal. And they change their ruling accordingly. So sometimes ulama differ because one has access to information that the other does not. Right? So again, I said this is a bit of a technical topic, but it's necessary. This is a necessary topic because every day young people come up to me and they ask me, why? Why are there so many different opinions? Now you know some of the reasons why. We didn't have time to go through all the reasons. Maybe inshallah next time we'll go through a few more. But now the final point. What do you do about it? A lot of young people ask me the question, what do I do about it? You know, the Mawlana in this masjid saying is haram, the Mawlana in that masjid saying is halal. Who do I follow? So, to make it very simple, I'm giving you three principles. Number one, pick an alim and follow. Don't just pick and choose from everybody whatever suits you. Because the average person ends up picking what suits their nafs, what suits their desires. Pick an alim and follow. If it's a Hanafi, a Shafi, a Maliki, someone who doesn't even follow a mazhab, as long as he's an alim you trust. You know, this guy is a scholar, he studied deeply, he understands fiqh, he understands the principles of fiqh, he understands all the different opinions, I'm following him. So pick an alim and follow. Do not try to do fiqh on your own. This is very, very important. We have a young generation who want to make their own fiqh rulings without any knowledge of Arabic, without any knowledge of tafsir, without any knowledge of the principles of fiqh, the purposes of fiqh, you know, the maxims of fiqh. It takes 7 to 10 years of study to become proficient in the field of fiqh. You can't make your own fiqh rulings by reading a translation of Sahih Bukhari. It doesn't work that way. You're going to end up with wrong opinions. So don't make your own opinions. Rather, follow an alim. Someone you trust, somebody who is an expert in that field. Follow him. But at the same time, points 2 and 3, at the same time, do not treat his opinion as godly. Do not treat his opinion as perfect. Do not treat his opinion as the be-end and end-all of this religion. Again, the other extreme in our community, you know, if someone is following an alim and you tell them a different opinion, they get angry with you. They start talking to you like you're a kafir or a non-Muslim or a deviant. Relax, there are different opinions in the religion. Your scholar's opinion is not the only one. There are other acceptable approaches to this religion as well. Right? Don't get all angry about these issues. Don't make it an issue where if you're not following my Mulana, you're going to hell. That's not how it works. That's not how it works. Learn to respect the other opinions. That's point number 3. Learn to respect the other opinions. As a community, we are only going to be united if we learn to respect differences of opinion. Some people think to unite, we all have to have the same opinion. That's never going to happen. It never happened in the time of the Sahaba. It never happened in the time of the Tabi'in. It's never going to happen. There will always be different approaches to fiqh. Ulama will always have differences of opinion. The sooner we realize that, accept that, respect that, then only we will have unity. So 3 things. Pick a alim and follow him. Number 2, accept that he's not perfect and he could be wrong on some issues. Number 3, respect all opinions that come from within Ahl Sunnah wal Jama'ah, that come from within the scholarly tradition. Accept all of these opinions as acceptable. Don't get all hardcore on these issues. These are secondary issues. And I want to end with a hadith that clarifies all of this, a very beautiful hadith. It gives hope to ulama around the world and their followers. The Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam stated, whichever alim or scholar makes an effort to understand an issue, if he is wrong, Allah will reward him. And if he is right, Allah will give him double the reward. Meaning what? What does the hadith mean? On these issues of difference of opinion, you are following an alim. That alim tried his best to figure out what's the right ruling, and he's following what he believes is the right ruling. Whether you are right or wrong, you are going to be rewarded by Allah, because that is how vast Allah's mercy is. We have forgotten the vastness of Allah's mercy. We are restricting Allah's mercy when Allah has made it vast. Allah's mercy is for all of the different groups within Ahl Sunnah wal Jama'ah, all the different madhabs. Right? Someone believes that dolls are haram, and one group believes dolls are haram. Allah will accept from both. Whoever's right is going to get double reward, whoever's wrong still going to get reward, because they are following a hadith. They are following a scholarly opinion. Right? So don't get hung up on these secondary issues. Because Allah has already said, the Prophet has already promised us, Allah is going to reward whether you're right or wrong on these issues. Follow a scholar, but do not treat him as infallible. And at the same time, learn to respect all the opinions that exist within Ahl Sunnah wal Jama'ah. May Allah help us to do so. May He grant us a deeper understanding of this religion. May He make us from those who are firm in our faith and not allow our faith to waver for any reason at all. And may He unite this ummah, and may He make us from those who respect each other and love each other despite our differences. Wa akhiru da'wana. Alhamdulillahi rabbil alameen.